One week from today, the contract expires for writers of the members of the Writers Guild of America. Between now and then, producers and writers will either negotiate a new contract or face the possibility of a strike. If you have a dog in this fight, give us a call and tell us what you think. Our number is 800-989-8255. You can also zap us an email, talk@npr.org. Renee Bolsé is in a unique position to watch this play out from both sides of the table. Bolsé is executive producer of NBC's Law and Order and the showrunner. We'll find out what that means in just a couple of minutes. He joins us now from NPR West in Culver City, California. Thanks very much. Law and Order is, of course, one of the great franchises on TV.
Oh, thanks, Neil. I'm glad to be here.
And Renee Bolsé has been with that program since it started. You also then left for a while to become co-developer and executive producer of one of the spin-offs, Law and Order CI, and I'm now back with the mothership?
That's right. Yeah, they asked me to come back last year. The show was about three episodes away from being canceled, and they asked me to see what I could do to help.
Right into the rescue.
Yeah. I guess so.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a writer and a producer in television in Hollywood for a very long time. What's at stake in this strike?
Money and ego, which is a pretty volatile combination.
Indeed. The issue, as I understand it, or as it's been explained, is that producers say, we don't know what's going to be happening in the future with all of these digital spin-offs of our programs, webisodes and that sort of thing.
Well, that's basically what they've been saying ever since the business was created, you know, nearly 100 years ago. Nobody knows what new technology was, whether it was sound or color or television or CinemaScope or, you know, so it's a familiar refrain. And that certainly hasn't stopped anybody from investing in the business or, you know, choosing the business as a career.
Mm-hmm. What all of those technological improvements meant in the long run was money.
Yeah, I mean, this business, if it's a genius at nothing, if not monetizing content, you know, they have ways of making money off what writers create, you know, more ways than you can imagine. I'm a part owner of one of the shows, and so I get these profit statements, and they have unbelievable number of categories in which they make money, everything from network runs, domestic syndication, foreign syndication, basic cable, domestic and foreign pay TV, airlines, satellite transmission, DVDs, foreign videos, format fees, internet downloads, computer games. They know how to make money off of this stuff.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Renee Bolsé, our executive producer and the showrunner on Law and Order. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255. And first of all, explain that term, showrunner. What does that mean?
Well, in my case, I'm the executive producer. I'm also the head writer, and I'm sort of the buck stops here in terms of creative decisions on the show. So I choose the stories, I develop the stories, I rewrite, I talk with the actors, the directors, blah, 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 you know, all that kind of stuff.
So you're the final decision maker?
Me, and then there's Dick Wolf, but... At least for Law and Order, I'm the last guy.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself, as you said, you're now a co-owner of one of these franchises? Do you consider mm-hmm. yourself? Which camp do you see yourself in? I guess financially, you're on the production side.
Well, I have a foot in both camps, but I probably have seven toes in the writer's camp, just because I see myself as a writer, and you know whatever success I've had has come principally from my writing,
mm-hmm.
And I, you know, was able to parlay my writing into producing. And you know, the main reason I'm a part owner of a show is because I co-created a show,
mm-hmm.
And I co-created it because I was a writer. So mm-hmm. you know, my allegiances are definitely on the writer's side.
A show like Law and Order, and again, it's spinoffs, but that's a show where a lot of writers have gone on to become showrunners, producers, executive producers. Is that common in Hollywood?
For a show that sticks around for a while, yes, of course. That's, you know, writers come up through the ranks, they learn the business of producing, and then, you know, hopefully they go off and fly on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the executive producer and creator of House, you know, worked on Law and Order, David Shore. Any number of people have come through Law and Order over the years.
Yeah, and you see even on a show like CSI, if you watch the credits over the years, people who were writers in season one are producers and executive producers by season three or four.
Well, quite often titles are given instead of raises. So. I guess that's pretty common in every business.
I suspect that's right. Now, forecasting the future can be difficult. Do producers have a point when they say they're going to need more time to figure out how the new technology is going to play out before they decide what cut the writer should get?
I don't think you need to wait to see what level of income is going to be coming in to determine how much, what size cut you're going to give the writers. Like I said, the business has been in a state of flux for the last 100 years, and mm-hmm. To say we have to wait till everything settles down before we can figure out how much what your share should be is ridiculous. It's like I said, it's a business that's always in flux. It's never going to settle down, and people learn to live with change. So.
Is there a producers association, and are you about to get drummed out of it?
No, I mean there's I'm not really part of a producers association. Mm-hmm. The people who are members of that club are presidents and CEOs of networks and studios, that kind of thing. I'm a small fish as far as they're concerned.
All right, let's see if we can get some callers in on this conversation. We're talking with Renee Balse, the executive producer and showrunner on Law and Order, with us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City, California. Ammon is with us. Ammon calling from Alton, Illinois.
Yes, this is Ammon. Hi, my question is, if a strike does occur between the Writers Guild, which shows will be immediately affected and which shows have written episodes further in advance? For example, The Daily Show and The Colbert Report are daily, and they have to be written that day. So which ones will be affected immediately?
Well, I think you just named two of them, though. Jon Stewart is allowed to write material for himself. Stephen Colbert is allowed to write material for himself. Same for The Letterman Show, the Tonight Show. Those shows will be the ones most immediately affected. But like I said, writer-performers can write material for themselves. As far as dramas, most will have 8, 9, 10 episodes in the can, and they may have, one or two scripts in the bank, waiting to be produced. I think soap operas are going to be affected rather quickly. New shows are subject to a different kind of contract, so that's not going to be affected. Reality shows, for those of you who enjoy them, get ready to see an onslaught of them to fill in holes.
But don't they have writers too?
Yeah. Well, this is a development in the last couple of days that originally the Writers Guild made a big effort to unionize writers on reality shows, but they've largely abandoned that effort in the last couple of days for a number of reasons, partly maybe as a quiet concession to the AMPTP, the mm-hmm. Producers Alliance, as in answer to the producers removing a particular odious proposal off the table, which was the elimination of residuals. So mm-hmm. It was a bit of a tit for tat.
I've also read that we've not seen as many new shows canceled early in the new television season as we might expect, partly because of the possibility of a strike.
Well, that's true, though there is one school of thought that says that the networks and studios are kind of looking forward to a strike as a way of cleaning house, because basically their season has been tanking. Mm-hmm. The new shows are just doing terribly across the board. And this would be a quick and easy way of getting rid of a lot of dead wood. Mm-hmm. But again, that's posturing on the part of the networks to take that attitude.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ammon, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can go to let's try Sharon. Sharon's with us from Little Rock in Arkansas.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm just very curious. I'm a huge fan of the original Law and Order. In fact, I sheepishly admit that I see 3 to 5 hours of all the products each day through cable. But
I love you
what's
for
happened
it.
To the original? Why has it been so delayed?
Well, because we're scheduled to go on in January on Sunday nights once football stops on NBC. Though given the performance of their new shows, they may call us from the bench sooner than that replace a failing show. But
mm-hmm. Speaking,
well, I wish you luck. I am a huge fan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
And speaking of replacement, obviously you're going to have to replace your chief prosecutor there on the program, who's running for president of the United States.
Yes. Well, we moved Sam Waterston. We gave him a promotion.
But not a
pay
raise.
Same salary, bigger title.
Yeah.
Pardon?
But not a pay raise, yes.
Right, not a pay raise. So he'll be taking over that job of chief prosecutor. And we've brought in a very fine actor, Linus Roach, to step into the shoes formerly occupied by Sam.
Mm-hmm.
We've brought in a new detective, Jeremy Listo, that people might know from 6 Feet Under and Kidnapped and the movie Waitress. So, you know, we've shaken things up a bit on that, on the mothership, as we call it.
Yeah. We're speaking with Renee Balsay, executive producer and showrunner of Law & Order. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And I also want to ask you about a special project you've been spearheading. This is a library project in honor of Francis Gorin. First of all, I think you should tell us who Francis Gorin is.
Francis Gorin is the mother of a character I created on Law & Order Criminal Intent. The main detective there, played by Vincent D'Onofrio, is mm-hmm. Bobby Gorin. His mother was a librarian. She passed away on the show last year. And I've been a longtime supporter of an organization called Room to Read, which was founded by a former Microsoft executive, John Wood. And Room to Read has built something like 4,000 libraries in different developing countries. And I thought it would be kind of a neat idea to galvanize this huge cyber community of Criminal Intent fans into donating money to build a library, which once it will be built, will have a plaque, a dedication plaque in honor of Francis Gorin.
Hmm.
And so, and yeah, you know, I've up to a limit, I've committed myself to, you know, making a dollar for dollar match of every donation. And so far, you know, it started in one website, and now it's spread to 5 or 6 websites, even to France. We've had contributions from Europe, from South Africa, Australia, Asia, South America. So I thought it would be kind of a neat way of using the enthusiasm of this, these cyber fans, and sort of putting it all to good use.
Of course, Law and Order and its various byproducts, including Criminal Intent, are seen in many of those countries. Indeed, they're produced
yes.
in some of those countries.
Well, in Russia and in France, one of the categories I mentioned earlier, format fees, that's when the studio sells the format of the show to Russian producers, and they hire Russian actors, and they shoot, you know, they basically take our scripts and shoot them in Moscow. You know, they adapt them to the Russian context, and they've done the same thing in France. So,
do they have that same, you know, in Moscow, the major cases are handled by the major case squad, that thing at the beginning?
Yes, but it's in a language I don't understand, so who knows what they're actually saying.
Who knows what they're actually saying. Let's see if we can get another caller in on the line. This is Marla. Marla's with us from Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, my question is, I'm wondering how this the writers' strike, potential strike, might affect the upcoming renegotiation of the Screen Actors contract in June.
I think the Directors Guild contract also comes up this summer.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, as an independent director producer in Colorado, it's working with writers who are non-union. So I guess I'm free of that fear, but of course, you know, how does it work with the? How might this affect the Screen Actors? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, Marla, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right, well, traditionally, the Writers Guild has always been the first to to get certain benefits like residuals, health plan, and you know, we're always sort of taking the brunt of this kind of labor activity. And then whatever we get, the Directors Guild and SAG kind of steps in and
they get, you know, Me Too contracts?
Exactly. So, and there's always a jockeying to see who goes on strike first, who are, you know, the Directors Guild has never struck. So basically they take the threat of our strike and they parlay it into, you know, a good deal for them. So at this point, there's talk that the Directors Guild may strike a deal even, you know, 6 months in advance of the expiration of their contract. Mm-hmm. But like I said, it's a lot of ego, a lot of money is involved. You know, what's inevitable is that there is a deal that will be struck at some point, and it's just a question of how much posturing will go on, you know, before it.
Between now and then, and how much money might get lost by people on both sides if there is a strike.
Well, you know, again, this would be the third strike that I've been through. In 88, there was a strike that lasted for 5 months. The figure that was bandied about was that the strike had cost the industry $500 million. Well, just to put that in today's context, the DVD sales for the Series 24 amounted to $450 million.
Wow.
So $500 million isn't what it used to be.
Rene Balsé, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Rene Balsé, executive producer of NBC's Law & Order and the showrunner. For more information on the Francis Gorin Room to Read project, go to our website, npr.org/talk. And Rene Balsé joined us from our studios at NPR West in Culver City, California. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.